Right, okay, good evening. The focus of this group is usually the Torah reading which takes place on Shabbat. So around the world, every week, there is the Torah reading, the same, although sometimes it's one thing in Israel and something else everywhere else. So that's usually the focus, and we take a Kabbalistic Hasidic teaching relating to the Torah reading. Now, this Shabbat is an interesting Shabbat, because normally one Torah scroll is read. This Shabbat, three Torah scrolls are read. So that's pretty rare in the Jewish year. On Simchat Torah, the rejoicing of the law, all the Torah scrolls are taken out of the ark and they dance with them, and in fact they read from three Torah scrolls then as well. And once or twice otherwise during the year it might happen. So it's quite a rare phenomenon. So we have three Torah scrolls. One will be taking the, you know, the one bit of the Torah as in order, the Sedra, the Parshat HaShavua. The second one will be talking about the Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, because this Shabbat is going to be the new moon. And the third one will be reading the text that we have in front of us, a bit of it, and the Haftorah, the reading from the prophets, will be relating to this text. So this is sort of it's the last one and it's the key. And so this is the one that the discourse that I've picked out this evening is focusing on. So funnily enough, the reading in the third Torah scroll is something that was read only a few weeks ago in the regular order of reading the Torah. Ki Tisa. And it says at the beginning over here, I'm just going to start this off in Hebrew, Vayadave Hashem el Moshe Lema, God spoke to Moses saying, Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Yisrael lifkudehem, when you count the heads of the Jewish people, v'natnu ish kofer nafsho, each person should give an atonement for his soul, la Hashem to God, b'fkod otam, when you count them, and there shouldn't be any plague among them when you count them. Now there's an interesting concept of not counting Jewish people. And it says we should be numberless, that the Jewish people should be beyond number. And so there is the issue of not counting people. So this complex way, or not so much complex, maybe it's quite an easy, it actually might make it easier, was that everyone gave a half a shekel. And then by counting up all the shekelim, you know how many people there are. So it was in fact quite a good way of counting, people. There remains the problem about counting people, which, as usual in Jewish life, has a sort of paradoxical side to it, because many prayers in the synagogue have to have at least ten men present. So how do you count to see if there's 10 men if you can't count people? So one way you do it is that there's a verse which has got, a biblical verse which has got 10 words. And so you count the people with the words of the verse, Hoshia et Amecha Ovalech et Nachalotecha Ureim Kvinasim Ad Ha'olam. And if you get to the end of the verse and you've still got someone there, then you know you got 10. With not counting, one still has to count quite a lot. However, here we have the first instance of this idea of not counting people, and that there's some negative effect of counting them. But also, the half shekel that they're giving, v'natnu ish kofer nafsho, each person gives the atonement of his soul. And this atonement, it's an interesting idea, which we'll discuss a little bit. Zeyitnu, this is what they should give. Kol ha'over al ha'pekudim, everyone who is counted, everyone to be included in the count, which means between 20 and 60 years old. Machatzit ha'shekel, a half a shekel. Now the modern Israeli currency is actually called shkalim, and the shekel was a weight. It was a weight of silver. But shekel hakodesh, with a sacred shekel, eshim geira hashekel. There are 20 geira in a shekel, and what they have to give is machatzit hashekel, a half a shekel. So that's 10 geira. Truma laHashem, a gift to God, an offering to God. It's a kind of charitable offering, because with the giving of this half a shekel, that is going to be used for the making of the sanctuary. Kol ha'over al ha'pkudim, everyone who is included in the count, miben eschim shana v'mala, from 20 years old and upwards, yiten trumat Hashem, should give this gift, this offering. Ha'ashir lo yaber, the rich man should not increase. V'hadal lo yamit, and the poor person shouldn't give less. Mimachatzit hashekel, hashekel, than this half a shekel. Latet et trumat Hashem, to give the offering to God. Lechaper al nashotechem, to atone for your souls. It repeats that idea of atoning for your souls. V'lakachta et kesef hakipurim, and you should take the silver of the offering or of the atonement. Me'et b'nei Yisrael, from the Israelites. V'natata oto, and you, that's Moshe, should give it al avodat oel ma'ed, to the work of making the sanctuary. V'haya l'vnei Yisrael l'zikaron l'vnei Hashem, and it shall be for the Jewish people a memory before God, l'chaper al nafshotechem, to atone for your souls. Again, the idea of atonement. So we have a number of images coming together over here. One is the image of giving, of being counted and giving a coin instead of being counted. Another is the idea that this coin is actually being given to charity. It's being given in order to build the sanctuary, which is, there are varieties of charity. One kind of charity is giving money to poor people so that they have food. But very much in the experience of the Jewish people through the generations is giving charity for religious institutions. The sanctuary was the first religious institution mentioned in the Bible. Later in the Bible, in the Book of Kings, you have the temple. And the temple also had to be supported by charitable institutions, and there was a collecting box in the temple, and as you walk into the temple, people would put some money in this collecting box. That, in fact, is the subject of the Haftorah for this Shabbat. It will be talking, where it takes something from the prophets, it will be talking about that. So, and in terms of building the sanctuary, this in the desert with Moshe, this half a shekel wasn't the only coin that was used for giving the for donating, for building it. In fact, people donated all kinds of things: gold, silver, precious stones, copper, various kinds of jewelry, and special kinds of cloth and woven wool. And they also donated their skills and their talents, their ability to weave, and to weave in a beautiful way. So it was a multiple product which came from the efforts of the entire Jewish people. And here we have also the idea of atonement and the mysterious concept of it being a half a shekel. Now there's a very, very famous Hasidic teaching about this from Rabbi Dov Ber, the second leader of the Hasidic movement. Why is it that we gave a half? Because we are one half and God is the other half. So the person gives his or her half and God gives the other half, and that's the way that you become a whole. That's a famous teaching about this, on this concept, relating to this concept. Are there any questions at this point, because this is basically the introduction. We're then going to launch into the actual teaching. But are there any points to be understood, to be raised? Okay, so should we go ahead? Yeah. Right. So we generally start with a melody, because in order to enter a Hasidic discourse, it's not, you know, there's us entering the discourse and the discourse entering us. So in order to open our heart and our mind, so to speak, we generally start with a melody. And this was the melody with which the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose discourse we're going to be studying, this was a melody that very often preceded when he would tell a discourse. There would be this melody first, and when this melody began to be sung, everyone knew that the discourse was beginning, and it was a special atmosphere among the sometimes thousands of people who were assembled. And everyone would stand during the discourse. It was a very intense time, and it became, as it were, open channels to hear these spiritual teachings, which we're going to be trying to drink a little bit of. Oh, ya 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 ba yo ya yo. Oh, yira, yira, yom, ba, yom. Yom, ba, yom, ba, yom, ba, yom, ba, yom. Ha, yira, ba, yom, ba, ba, yom. Ah, ho, ya, yira, ba, yom, ba, yom. Ya, ba, yira, ba, yom, ba, yom. Ha yiridamba, ha yiridamba, yo yamba, 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 oh ho, ya 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 yo ya ram bam bam, ha ya yo ya ram bam bam, ha ya ram ram bam bam, ha ya ya ram ba ya bam bum, ha ya ram ba ya ba yo, ha ba ya ram ba, ha ya ram ba ha. Om ba yam ba yam ba ba yam ba yam ba yam ba ba Om bam ba yom bam bam bam. So if we go over the page, we have the Hebrew text, which I'm going to read and also translate. Now this was said on Shabbat. It was Shabbat Mishpatim, which is not the same as the Shabbat this week, but it was Parshat Shkalim. It was the section, the additional section, which is going to be read this Shabbat, Shkalim, about the Shkalim, and it was Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar at that time, and for us in 1983, 5743, which is 1983. And this is an unedited discourse, because some of the discourses were transcribed and then edited by the late Rebbe, and this one was not edited. Hi Akiva, how are you? And so it is a there we are. Thank you. It's an unedited discourse. Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Yisrael, when you count the heads of the Jewish people, v'natnu ishkof v'nafsho, and each person will give the atonement for his soul, ze yitnu, this is what they should give, machatzit ha-shekel, a half a shekel, he'ashir lo yarbe, the rich person should not give more, v'hadar lo yamit, and the poor person should not give less, L'chaper nafshoteichem, to atone for your souls. So there we have, in 2.5 lines, a kind of summary of the whole of that paragraph. V'yuduim ha'viyukim b'zeh, and it's known, the points that were raised, b'drushei rabotenu nisiyenu, in the teachings of the earlier Lubavitch Chabad teachers. Now the point is that the Hasidic movement began in the middle of the 18th century with the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidism, and he was revealing a new spiritual dimension drawn from upper worlds, which was being transmitted through his disciple Rabbi Dov Ber, the Magid of Meserich, and then came his disciple Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, who was the founder of Chabad. And he had a new twist to the whole way of presenting the essence of Torah teaching. And that's called the Chabad style. And Chabad stands for Chochmah Bina Da'at, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And it's as if it is drawing from some very deep level, which in a way is beyond wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. But he's transmitting it to our minds so that our minds are able to absorb something of this teaching, and then hopefully that not only affects our mind, it affects our heart, and it affects the way in which we think and speak and act. It affects the way in which we live. So each teacher from Rabbi Shneur Zalman onwards was, as it were, bringing this spiritual dimension closer and closer to our world. And our Rebbe, who taught this discourse in 1983, he was the seventh after Rabbi Shneur Zalman. There was Rabbi Shneur Zalman, and then a whole series of teachers, and many of whom were sons or grandsons of the one before, and or they all were in one way or the other, and this is, so it was a dynasty, of which the seventh and the final figure in this dynasty was Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who passed away in 1994, and this is his teaching that we're looking at. And so when he taught, he very often built his teaching on the six preceding teachers. So in a sense, we're getting the teachings of seven Chabad Lubavitch teachers, because what is happening is we're going back to the very beginning of the whole process of the revelation of the divine to the world through the giving of the Torah. And we're looking at the inner dimension of the Torah and the power that this inner dimension has got to flow down into our world and become something which is part of the nitty-gritty, the reality of the world, which is the goal of existence, that the essence of godliness and the essence of Torah teaching should be transmitted into the physical world at its lowest dimension, which is the world which we inhabit with all its problems and complexities. Now, among the questions that were raised by the previous teachers, Madur nishtanta mitzvah zu misha mitzvah. Why is this command different from previous commands, from other commands? Shenem Abba, because it says about this command, Ha'ashir lo yaber, the rich person shouldn't give more, V'hadal lo yamit, and the poor person shouldn't give less. Now that's a very odd thing. It's very odd that there should be something which is so specific, that the rich person shouldn't give more and the poor person shouldn't give less. In almost every area of Torah, there is the ability to do more in some way. It might be dependent on wealth, or it might be dependent on talent, or skill, or time. And whatever it is, a person acts according to their ability. Let's take Torah study. This moment we're together studying Torah. So there are some people, they spend several hours a day studying Torah. They have the time, thank God. That's I know someone, he works as a plumber in Israel. Now, working as a plumber, you can get quite a good salary as a plumber. In fact, there's a well-known Israeli joke about a plumber who comes to fix someone's washing machine or something like that, and he fixes it, and it takes him about 5 minutes, and he says, that will be $100. And the lady says to him, $100 for 5 minutes work? My husband's a brain surgeon and he doesn't earn that kind of money. So the farmer says, well, I didn't get that kind of money when I was a brain surgeon. I know someone, he's a plumber, he works as a plumber half the day, and the other half the day he sits and learns Torah. You know, so if you've got a wonderful job like a plumber in Israel, so you can afford to spend the rest of the day just studying Torah. But the idea is that if you've got more ability to spend time studying, so you study more. If you've got more money, you give more charity. If you've got more of this or that, then you do something more. How is it that this is a mitzvah which it doesn't seem, it's not proportional to anything, any other aspect of the person? Vehine bekorbanot, now with the offerings, bringing offerings to the temple, the hakhavat hakorbanot kushura im machatzit hashekel. In fact, the offering, the bringing of offerings in the temple relates to this idea of the half shekel. Shahare mi machatzit hashekel makhiven et korbanot hatzibur. Because, now, this is an interesting point about the half shekel. You see, the half shekel that's described in the passage in the Torah that we just read was speaking about something happening in the time of the Jewish people together with Moses. However, for hundreds of years, there was an institution that every year, at this time of year, they would give a half a shekel. In fact, it went on for more than 1,000 years. Because it extended till the end of the time of the Second Temple. And all through this period, while there was a sanctuary or a temple, people would give half a shekel every year, and the half shekel would become a fund which was used to buy the public offerings which were offered in the temple. There were private offerings in a temple. For example, if a woman had a baby, she would come to the temple with an offering, usually of 2 doves, and that was her offering, thanksgiving to God that she had a baby. On the other hand, if someone passed his law exams, he might also come and bring a thanksgiving offering to the temple. Or some other similar achievement, like getting his 3rd book published or something like that. But there was a public offering that was offered every morning and every afternoon, and that corresponds to the morning prayer and the afternoon prayer, and that was paid for not by special individuals, but by the whole people giving half a shekel a year, and those half shekel a year, that was used by, from everyone, that was used for the offerings. Now, when we talk about offerings, so therefore offerings have a connection with a half a shekel. But when we're talking about offerings, not the public offering is a standard thing, but the private offering, Amru, Ashir Shahevi Korban Oni Lo Yatza, a rich person who brought the offering of a poor person hasn't fulfilled his duty, because sometimes a rich person would bring a different kind of offering to a poor person. You could have a bull or a dove or a flower offering, depending how rich the person is, and the poor person would just bring a flower offering. So there are differences in these personal offerings. And similarly with the mitzvah, the command of giving charity, Machatzit HaShekel, which also relates to the giving of the half shekel, because this, the Machatzit HaShekel, he netinat tzedakah, because giving this half shekel is one place you see very clearly in the Torah, the whole Jewish people giving tzedakah, giving charity. So it's ita b'gemara ktubot, it says in the Talmud, in tractate ktubot, shahanoten tzedakah tzarich latet lefi erko v'yucholto. Someone who gives charity should be giving according to his ability. And if he doesn't give appropriately, then it's possible there should be negative things. And there the Talmud tells the story of a very wealthy man, and he would give a bit of charity, but it was very small in comparison to what he should have given, and that was an upsetting thing, and the later history of what happened to his family wasn't very good. So there's the idea that charity is something that a person should be given according to their ability. And similarly with the contributions to the sanctuary, Shahayuba Yudgimul Tedfav Dvarim, in which there were 13, or another opinion, 15 kinds of donation, Zahav, Chesed, Nuchoshet, gold, silver, copper, Hare Kol Echad Ve'Echad Hevi Lefi Yecholto. Every person brought according to their ability. Umadua B'Mitzvat Machatzit HaShekel. Why is it with this command of giving the half a shekel, ne'emar he'ashir lo yaber, that the rich person shouldn't give more? Now, that's one point. Umagam, especially since, she'ne'emar kan, it says over here, lechaper al nafshotechem, that you're giving this half a shekel in order to atone for your soul. Ba'afal pechein, and even so, he'ashir lo yaber, the rich person shouldn't give more. You would think if you're giving charity to atone, then the person who has got more money would say, well, surely I should give a little bit more. It's not enough just to give the same as the chap next door. As an anthropologist, social anthropologist puts, you know, he says, am I rich or am I poor? I know that I'm poor, says the anthropologist, because I have an old car and I live in a small house. But the man in India knows that I'm rich because I've got shoes. So our concept of what is rich and poor varies a little bit. But the point is that if someone is trying to atone for something that he did wrong, now what is it that everyone is trying to atone for? Well, one of the issues that people are atoning for in this part of the Torah, even though the story about it comes after these verses, but it's in the same section, is the making of the golden calf. And that was a point in which the whole Jewish people went wrong. Incidentally, not the women. Of course, they always know what to do, what not to do, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a very important principle. But everyone else, not the tribe of Levi also, fortunately, most people got involved in some way, or at least didn't stop this worship of the golden calf, and that was a very serious issue, and so that is what is really being atoned for. So if you're trying to atone for something negative, again, you would expect that a person would go more to the limits of his ability rather than something which is very comfortable. A rich man giving half a shekel, he doesn't notice. Over yoter in a muvan, and another point's not understood. Ki mizeh she'ne'emar he'ashir lo yaber v'hadar lo yamid, from the fact that it says the rich person shouldn't give more and the poor one shouldn't give less, mashma, that implies shahakavana hi, that it means lebchinat ashir v'dal, it means rich and poor, benogel le'inyan zeh atzmo, in this particular area. Ki im benogel le'mitzvah zu, eini belchinat ashir v'dal. If in relation to this mitzvah he's not rich and he's not poor, lo haya katuv madgish bechlal shuhu ashir v'dal, the verse wouldn't emphasize whether he's rich or poor. ולכן צריך לומר הכוונה, so we must say that the verse means שבנוגע לעניין זה, as regards this itself, עצמו הוא בחין את השיר דל, he is rich or he's poor. In terms that means that this actual idea of giving the half a shekel, he's got a lot of shkalim, and the other person has hardly any shkalim, he's poor. Ve'im kein tzarich biyo biyoter, so therefore we need more explanation. Madua ha'ashir lo yaber v'adal lo yamit, why the rich one doesn't give more, why the poor one doesn't give less. So the focus so far of the question is always is focusing on this issue of how much one gives. Why should it be a fixed amount? And it goes even further, the last couple of lines of this first paragraph, which is all question. Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand the lecho'ora inyan zeh, at first sight, this idea, ha'ashir lo yaber, the rich person not giving more, hu heipach amur, is the opposite of what is said, b'nogei l'machzir ha'shekel, concerning the half shekel. And it says this in the Midrash, de'eini mevakesh ele lefi kochan. God says, I'm only asking according to your strength. Haynu shehabakasha hi mikol echad v'echad lefi kocho v'yecholto davka. The request is from each person according to that person's power and ability. Now, of course, you could say that the Midrash means, let's just have a look at it in the Midrash. It's in Bamidbar Rabbah. Here we have one volume of Midrash Rabbah. And this is one of the most popular Midrashim. Moshe says, see, it says, each person says like this. There are three things, various things, that Moses heard from God and he was shocked. When God said to him, as he says here, each person should give an atonement for their soul. Moses said, who is able to give an atonement for his soul? Flesh for flesh, everything a man has, he would give for his soul. And it still wouldn't be enough. So in other words, giving for one's soul, giving to atone for one's soul, however much one gives, is not enough for that. You're giving to atone for one's life, one has done something wrong, one is culpable. One might have to give everything one possesses and it still won't be enough. God said to him, I'm only asking from each one, not according to my strength, but according to his strength. So now that's an interesting statement. Because it implies, yes, indeed, you're right, that a person has to give a lot for to atone for his soul. But I'm not asking an infinite amount according to my strength. I'm asking according to each individual's strength. Which would suggest that the rich person gives 100 shkalim and the poor person gives a tenth of a shekel. But it would suggest some kind of gradient. So why instead of that is this so much, such a fixed thing? Right, so that basically is the question which is asked, and the point being that with the half a shekel we're trying to reach a level of our soul which in some way relates to the essence, which goes beyond distinctions. And the normal way in which a person relates to the divine, there are multiple qualities, and a person has different skills and talents and resources, and usually we are trying to use those resources according to the best of our ability, and each person has a different level of resource in this direction and in that direction. But here we're talking about something which is in some way more profound. We're trying to get to some level of the essence. And it's that level of the essence which is significant. Now we come to another point about the about this half a shekel. V'hine b'masha kosub ze yitnu. The fact that it said they should give. D'v'cho'ora tevat ze miyuteret. And the word this seems to be redundant. Amru Razal, the sages say, and they say it in a number of places. One is in the Jerusalem Talmud, the other is in this Midrash here, which I'll read to you in a second, and in other Midrashic places, in Tanchuma. Sheher Eloh HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Matbeya Shel Esh. God showed Moses a coin of fire. Now let's just take that the way it says it in the Midrash. In this Midrash over here, also in Bamidbar Rabbah. And it goes straight after the passage we read before. Ze yitnu, this is what they should give. Rabbi Meir said, God took a kind of coin of fire from under the throne of glory. And he showed it to Moses, and he said, this is what they should give. Like this is what they should give. So in other words, there is this coin of fire. Half a shekel made of fire. Something like that. Okay. Now, avalinyan ze tzarich bio. We have to try to understand that idea as well. Why should Moses have to be shown a coin of fire? Dibishlam, now we have another example of Moses being shown by God something made of fire. It's the golden menorah, which was supposed to be in the sanctuary. And when Moses was on Mount Sinai, God told Moses all about the menorah. And he didn't understand it. And God said to him, and God showed him a menorah made of fire. And in fact, he still didn't understand it. So when it came to the making of the menorah, God said, look, you take the right amount of gold and throw it in the fire and the right thing will happen. He put it in the furnace and out came the menorah. There was it. So you can understand the menorah is a very complicated thing with, it's got seven branches and all kinds of complicated designs which are mentioned in the book of Exodus. Exactly what design should be there, and it's clearly something very complicated. So you can understand Moses not being able to conceive this menorah and God showing it to him as a vision of a menorah of fire. So with the menorah, muvan shahaya kadosh baruch hu tzarich la'arot le'moshe menorah shelesh, that God had to show Moses a menorah of fire. I said it was a vision. Maybe it wasn't a vision. Maybe it was a real fire that if he would have held a piece of paper to it, it would have caught fire. Yeah, there's a discussion by Ibn Ezra and various other figures whether the visions in the Torah are real, you know. So if you he doesn't use this image, but you know, if you were there and you took a photograph, would you actually see the three angels who were visiting Abraham? So it's an argument between Ibn Ezra and Nachmanides. Now, but often the Marebe Etzba of Omazer, so God had to show Moses clearly the menorah in such a way he could point to it and say, this is what it is. Mishum shaha menorah, because the menorah, yesh ba ribui pratim, there are many different details. Omlom hamatbeot, but coins, kva huskru kama vekama pamim lifnei ze betorah, coins are mentioned many times in the Torah before this. Bechein la'achazeh, and also after this, there's nothing funny about coins. The Torah seems perfectly conversant with the concept of coinage. What's strange about it? So why did God have to show Moses a coin of fire? Now that coin of fire is what's, you know, in a way, that's the pivot of this discourse, this coin of fire. Gam tzarich lahavin. We also have to understand mashkatuv zeyit nu machatzit hashekel machatzit me'eschen geira. We also have to understand why does it say they should give half a shekel. Now that means half of 20 geira. Shem asaha geira, which makes 10 geira. Hari b'chama v'kama mekomod, there are many places. Matzino sha'ashleimut shel kol davar hi b'mispar eser dafka. The wholeness of something is with the number of 10. So there are many concepts of 10. Ukumo b'kar she'a mishkan, like the planks of wood which made the sanctuary. Sha'amdu ala adanim she'na'asu mimachzit ha'shekel. In fact, they stood. These planks stood on silver, blocks of silver, which were made from these silver shkalim that are being described here. But the planks, dichtiv ese amot orech hakeresh, each plank was 10 cubits high. Val derech ze Moshe Rabbeinu hayagvoa ese amot. And also the Talmud tells us that Moshe himself was 10 cubits high. So there's a concept of wholeness. There are 10 svirot, eser velotesha, 10 divine emanations, 10, not 11. The mezem muvan, from which we understood, shahashleimut hi b'mispa eser dafka, wholeness is with the number 10, ve'im kein mal inyan eschen gera hashekel. Why does it emphasize 20 gera is the shekel? Why does it say give half a shekel and the shekel is 20 gera? Why not make the point, give 10 gera? Because that would really be a number of wholeness. Okay. So now we're beginning to focus in on the way of understanding this so that it relates to our lives and it answers the questions which have been asked, but it also is something which helps us understand our task in life and our relationship with the infinite. Achayinyan hu, but the subject is as matters. The av shenema he'ashir lo yabeh v'adah lo yamid. Even though it says the rich man shouldn't give more and the poor man shouldn't give less, shneihem tzichim latet eser dafka. Each one of them has to give 10. That means 10 gera. Eile sheba eser gufa. But with this 10, Hine hadal noten eser shebehetem ledargato. The poor person gives 10 relating to his level. Vehashir noten eser shebehetem ledargato. And the rich man gives 10 relating to his level. Ukumavua badrushim. As explained in previous discourses, in note 18, it gives discourses of 100 years ago, and of more, 150 years ago, teachings on this topic, that we're talking about something or rather which is happening within spiritual realms. The Ashir Kai al Olam Atzilut. The rich man means the world of Atzilut. Now there are four worlds in the Kabbalah. And if we can, I'll move it around so that you'll be able to see it all. So at the top, we can put the infinite Ein Sof Baruch Hu. And then we have the world of Atzilut, which is the highest world of the four Kabbalistic worlds, and that's often called the world of emanation in English, and is a direct expression of the divine. And then we have further levels which come below, which are Briah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. Now all of these words mean making in some way, but in sort of more subtle ways at the top. Briah is creation, Yetzirah, formation, Asiyah, action. But these are just lower levels of world. So when it says that there are the rich man means the wealth of the highest level of these worlds, Atzilut. And the poor man v'esegera, and his ten geira that he gives, heim esesvirot da'atzilut, they are the ten svirot which there are in the world of Atzilut, from Chochma, wisdom, Bina, Da'at, understanding, knowledge, kindness, severity, mercy, victories, submission, foundation or dedication, and kingship. So those are the ten Sfirot which are in the world of Atzilut. And Vahadal, and the poor, Kai al Olamot Bria Yitzira Asiya, that's the level which is called poor, because this is a more concealed level of existence. In between Atzilut and Bria, there is a very heavy level of veiling, and that is the poor. V'ha'esegeri dileihim esesfirot debia, and it means the ten sfirot of this level. That is the ten geira of the half a shekel at this level. V'zeo ashir lo yabeh v'adal lo yamit. That's what it means. The rich one shouldn't give more. The poor person shouldn't give less. Ki b'shneim ashleimut hi b'mispa eser davka. For both of them, wholeness is 10. It can't be 11. It can't be 12. It has to be 10. It can't be 9. It can't be 8. Because the Sfirot are 10. It says in Book of Creation, Sefer Yetzirah, mentioned at that talk, Eser v'lo tesha, Eser v'lo achadeseh. 10 and not 9, 10 and not, and 10 and not 11. So there has to be, specifically, Dafka, they say in Hebrew, 10. There has to be that 10. That's why there has to be 10. Even if you're speaking about the level of, so to speak, wealth, doesn't mean physical, material wealth. It means the wealth of the infinite radiance of godliness. Or if you're speaking at a level of, so to speak, poverty, the created realms, which are a realm of concealment, in both of them there has to be exactly 10. Nonetheless, Esehu machatzit hashekel. The 10 is actually a half a shekel. Ki yesh beit inyanei shleimut, because there are two levels of wholeness. The 10 here and the 10 there, both of these are a quality of wholeness. Shleimut melamata lemaila, a wholeness from below to above. Now that means from this level going up there. You see, that is the way that the individual is reaching towards the divine. So the individual finds himself or herself in this created realm and reaches towards God. And that is the movement from below to above, which has got the quality of 10 and is from the level of poor, but it's the level of reaching above. And although it's poor because it's in the created realm, it's still got all 10 aspects of itself, because the person is a whole person. Wherever one finds oneself, one can always be a whole person. A person, one of the teachings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, there was a man called Howard Hughes, who was an enormously wealthy figure in the United States. And he was terrified that he would be kidnapped for his wealth. So he made himself into a kind of prisoner, living in a house as a recluse with many doors and locks. And then at a certain point he passed away. And the interesting thing was that Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was so steeped in Torah thought and Torah knowledge, he also, quite a number of times, responded to issues which took place in the world around, things that were in the news, and because, from his perspective, everything in life is a teaching about how to serve God. So if suddenly the headlines in the newspaper are about Howard Hughes passing away, that's not a thing by chance. That is, in fact, telling a person how they can serve the divine. And the Rebbe contrasted the idea of a person with great wealth like Howard Hughes, who was actually trapped. He wasn't free at all. And the Rebbe, and I heard this talk by the Rebbe. It was, the Rebbe would speak and it would be phoned through to London. So usually this was in the middle of the night, like 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And a whole lot of people would come to Lubavitch House and listen. And there would be this talk. And I heard this one where he compared Howard Hughes, who was not free, to people. There were people in concentration camps who were free. So even though they were trapped in a concentration camp and they were beaten and this was happening to them and that was happening to them, the most horrific things, and maybe they were killed at the end, they didn't survive physically, but spiritually they were free. And that concept of freedom, so you see the idea of having shleimut, of having wholeness, of having all your 10 sfirot there, your 10 spiritual dimensions there, whatever the situation, you might be stuck not only in the created world, which is here turned poor, one might be in a very difficult corner of the created world. Nonetheless, one is able to be whole. And so there is a wholeness from below to above, and there is also a wholeness from above to below. And those two kinds, these are the 10 sfirot from below to above, and the 10 sfirot from above to below. Ukomo Adam HaRishon, like Adam, the first man, Adam and Eve. Sheshleimut avodato hi b'itarut de'le'ela. The wholeness of his service of God was with an arousal from above, from God, milamayla lamata, from God to him. Shahari hu haya yitzir kapav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was created, he and Eve were created by God, kumosh katuv golmi ra'u enecha, my physical form, my embryo was seen by your eyes, God. Shezeu inyan ha'shleimut mitzad ha'boreh, that's wholeness as far as the Creator is concerned from above. Mashe'en ken kol achav mi'Yisrael, whereas later on, each one of the Jewish people, ha'riu katan shenolad, he's a child born, shetzarich la'aviv li'imo ad shenase gadol, who needs his parents, his father and mother till he grows up, o shahagidul hu al yedei atzmo, and even if he grows up by himself, nonetheless, he is needy. He needs things. In fact, even when we're older, we continue to need things. We're always dependent on something or someone. V'achar kach magia ad l'shleimut havodah. Then he comes to adulthood, which is described as wholeness of service, as defined economically, delimkor benichse aviv, that a person is allowed to sell. See, if a five-year-old child, unfortunately his father passes away, he inherits what his father owns, but he can't yet buy and sell, right? Otherwise the five-year-old would sell everything to the, you know, someone would give him a sweet, so he would sell him the whole estate. So he's under the jurisdiction of the Bet Din, of the Jewish Court of Law. And finally, when he's 20 years old, he comes to a stage that the court of law will say he's now old enough to take responsibility for himself. So, v'achar kach magia ad lishleimut, so ad shiyeh ben 20 shana, when he's 20, he's able to sell his father's possessions. In other words, v'haynu da'af, shegam avoda b'kol chatzmo hi be'ezeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though the service with his own effort is still with the help of God, v'lo b'kochi v'otzim yadi, God forbid, and it's not with, I don't think it's with my power, I know that it's God helping me, each person says, mikol makom ha'avodah hi ba'ofen kazeh, the service is in such a way, sha'adam oved oved b'koch atzmo, that the person works with his own effort, that's how he serves God, ki kach ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's what God wanted, there shouldn't be the bread of shame. The bread of shame means that one keeps getting things from above without having worked for them. The fact of there being this state of what it calls poor and working with one's own effort in order to get the illumination from above, that is the greatest thing in the Chabad description of the relationship of the individual with the divine. Because it's possible for there to be a way of thinking about our relationship with God, that what we're trying to get is some kind of illumination from God without having worked for it. And in Chabad teaching, that is considered something shameful. Not only is it something shameful, it doesn't last, and it's dangerous. An example of that problem was, to a certain extent, the effect of the radiance of the giving of the Torah on the Jewish people at Mount Sinai, that although they were supposed to have worked for it through the process of counting the Omer, which represents going through 47 times 7, 49 different levels, reaching higher and higher levels of purity, nonetheless, there is a sense in which they weren't prepared for what took place, and therefore that led to casualties of different kinds, of which one might even include the golden calf as one of the casualties, coming out of this tremendous radiance without people having made the necessary preparation. So, so there are these two pathways in general, the radiance coming from above and the radiance coming from below. So it is in detail in the divine service of each individual. There's the wholeness of service from above to below, and from below to above. And in both of them, the wholeness is with the number 10. Now, what is the avodah from below to above? Faith. Which has to reach, which has to permeate all the 10 qualities of our soul. Now that's a fascinating thing. Faith, emunah, is a way of relating to the divine which goes beyond our intellect. It's a step beyond our intellect. It's like we reach a deeper dimension in ourselves, and that is the dimension which connects to the divine. And the wholeness of service from above to below, the other way round, is that also the flow from above comes in the way of 10. So you have the flow from below to above, the emunah which permeates the 10 aspects of the soul, that's faith, and you also have the revelation from above, which is normally called Torah teaching. So we could say that we have faith moving from below to above, that's emunah, and Torah, it doesn't actually say it here, but very often, Torah moves from above to below, and the Torah permeates the whole being of the person. So each of them, the entire structure of the 10 qualities of one's being, including one's physical structure as well, there's the sefirot, and there's also the physicality of the person, become imbued with Torah from above to below, and faith, and the step that we make towards God from below to above. So it is through the whole downchaining of the worlds, as is explained in a famous Kabbalistic book by Rav Moshe Cordovero called Pardes. He was one of the people living in Tzfat, and he wrote a chapter in his book, Shar Eser Velo Achadeser. There's the gates, each of these sections of his book are called the gate, gate of this and gate of that. So there's a gate 10 and not 11. The Bechol Seydish Tal Shalut HaShleimut, he b'mispa Eser Dafka. That in the whole downchaining of the worlds, the wholeness is with the number 10. Omnam, however, Shleimut HaVoidahi, the wholeness of divine service is, not just there should be 10 from above to below and 10 from below to above, both of them should be united together. Somehow the service from above to below and the service from below to above should join together, and that becomes in Yam Shlishi, that becomes a third concept, Chibur Shneim Yachad, the joining of both of them together. That's what the half shekel is. The giving of the 10 gera, the half shekel, the wholeness of service, has to be in such a way that both the step from below to above and from above to below should be unified, ad kedei kach, so much so, sheyugash b'chol echad mehem, so that each one of them should feel she'eina ele machzit vilbav, that he's only a half. Now that's a very interesting thing. Because the worst thing, my grandfather used to say, the worst thing is complacency. And complacency means that the person feels he is a whole. He's done. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. So a person should strive in faith and in steps moving from below to above and in study of Torah from above to below, but always knowing that he's only a half, like that beautiful Torah from Rabbi Dovber, the Maggid of Meserich, the person is a half and God is the other half. He always knows that he or she is lacking. V'zeu ki tisayet rosh, and that's what it means when you count the head. Shakoch l'zeh, the power for this, la'achid beitofanei avodah elu, to unify these two types of service. V'me'inyam shalamayla mishneim, comes from something higher than both. The way that you unify two qualities is by reaching a higher level above both qualities. L'mayla mimayla omata, something which is higher than above and below. This level is above and that level is below. You have to get to a third level higher than both of them in order to be able to unify them both together. V'zeo ki tisayet rosh, and that's what it means when you count them. Now, counting is literally lifting the head. The person is lifted or lifts himself or herself higher than all limitations. And that's why it says, this is what they should give. Beautiful expression. This idea is going deeper and deeper, hiddenness beyond hiddenness. We're going to a deeper and deeper, more and more concealed level. It comes from the realm of concealment and potential to revelation and action. And that, and in a revealed way, and that impregnates all the qualities of our soul, ad she'amru, until the Midrash says, she'her Elo HaKadosh Baruch Hu matbeah shel esh, that God showed him a coin of fire. The matbeah of esh, heim beit dvarim, heim beit hofchim. The coin, which is a solid object, and fire, they are two opposites. A coin is not only physical, it's very precise, very limited. The coin has to be a certain size. Otherwise it's not this coin, it's another coin. Shahari tovim oto mitzura mesuyemet. The coin is actually beaten in a particular form. They mint the coin in a particular shape and form and size and weight. The esh hu hayesod hachiru chani midalat hayesodot. Fire is the most spiritual of all the four elements, fire, air, earth, and water. The fire is the most subtle and intangible. Umadbeya shalesh, and the coin of fire, hainu shenim shachinin naile beyoter, that means that there's something very exalted, the fire. Shamadbeya gufa, shehi bemedida v'agbala, naaseh beofen shel esh shelamayla bemedida v'agbala. So in other words, the coin of fire is something very exalted. The coin of fire is something which is on top of the whole thing. Because the coin has got limitations, but it becomes something which has no limitations. The coin is limited and defined, and the fire is beyond limitation. So it's when you take something finite and blend it together with the infinite, that's what the coin represents. It represents the two basic parameters of existence, finitude and beyond finitude, which are normally two completely different dimensions, and it joins them together. That's what the coin of fire is doing. It's joining the infinite with the finite. And that is really the whole process of human life in this world, joining the infinite and the finite. The Yehi Rotzon, may be the will of God, Shal Yidei HaLimud Hilchot Machatzed HaShekel, that by studying the laws and the ideas about the half shekel, V'chol HaOsek B'Torat Ola Ki'ilu Hikriv Ola, anyone who learns the laws of some subject, even if it's only in the time of the temple, we don't do it now, it's as if he did it. Harezeh Gufa Yemaher, that itself, the actual study, should speed up et ha'achishena shel ha'geula shlishit. It should, the speeding up God speeding up the third redemption, or Binyan Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, the building of the third temple, Mikdash Avni Konenu Yodecho, the sacred temple of God, which your hands, God's hands, will establish, Beviat Mashiach Tzidkenu, with the coming of Mashiach, Bimhera B'Yameinu Mamash, swiftly in our days. So there we have the idea of the half a shekel, which is a coin of fire, which combines these processes of above to below and below to above, and the way they are unified together, and they are unified together by a third dimension which is absolutely beyond the distinction between upper and lower. And that is the way in which the worlds, the different dimensions of worlds, the rich and the poor, each one at its own level of shleimut, of wholeness, are able to achieve a level of unity, and the ultimate unity of the infinite with the world, not blasting the world out of existence, but on the contrary, that there should be a physical world, a world of finitude and physical limitations, impregnated and expressing the infinity of God, the divine, which will be the case with the coming of the Messiah. Okay, so that's this teaching of 1983 by Yolam
Chilev.
Thank you.
So what appears to be an unfair system, where the poor pay more and the rich pay less, is a metaphorical system as you go deeper into it.
Well, I think that on terms of the actual practicality of collecting this money, the half a shekel is a small amount of money. So it's not considered as something that really the poor person wouldn't be able to afford. It is something within their possibility. And it grants them a connection within the offerings which are brought every day in the temple. However, like every line, every teaching, every word in the Torah, it has many levels to be explained and communicated, and so this dimension takes it beyond the practicalities of the actual collecting. I mean, the Mishnah, there is a whole section of the Mishnah called Tractate Shkalim, which has got explanations in the Talmud, in the Jerusalem Talmud, which funnily enough has been absorbed in the Babylonian Talmud. So there's an interesting way in which the two Talmuds are absorbed in one at this point of Shkalim, and I wonder whether that connection might fit with the way that the half a shekel of fire is a combination of two opposites, and there you have the Jerusalem and the Babylonian Talmud, which meet in this one tractate that the printed edition of the Babylonian Talmud has one volume of the Jerusalem Talmud, namely Shkalim. But everything in the Torah, I mean, so that practical dimension is very, it was a very interesting project whereby they would go around, there was an organization throughout ancient Israel for collecting these shkalim, and the shkalim would come and would be put in special chests or urns in the temple, and the urns had, instead of Hebrew letters on them, they had Greek letters, alpha, beta, gamma, you know, which is another combination of opposites, that in the temple itself there would be urns with Greek letters representing the shekels that have been collected this year, the shekels from last year, and the later shekels. So the whole concept of these shkalim and the half shekel, it's a fascinating concept, and here we're taking it on a spiritual level, especially revolving around this image found in the Midrash, the coin of fire taken from under the throne of glory of the divine.
It's interesting that there's some communal things where everybody gives equal amounts.
One vote at the AGM.
Yeah, a bit like democracy, if you like. One vote each. Yeah. But Sadaka charity, interesting, although you mentioned it's communal things, not necessarily you give charity to an individual also.
Yes, but all varieties of charity are likely to be on an individual level.
I think the idea is that in a communal thing, everybody should have equal say. Nobody should be... That's why everybody's given an equal amount to the temple, and everybody should feel that they've got an equal share in it.
Okay, Anthony, that's an interesting link with the democratic principle.
Very unusual to have this equality.
I don't know whether with the half shekel went to vote. I'm not sure. I don't think there was actually. I mean, it's I'm sure someone could spin an article about democracy from that. And there are certain democratic principles there in processes.
Yeah, I mean, the simple understanding is that it had to be equal because they used it for counting.
Well, yeah, I mean, the point is that the essence of the soul is infinite, and in that sense, everyone is equal. Mm. I mean, there's a very powerful expression of the infinite significance of each individual in the Lubavitcher Rebbe's teaching, which I think comes from the Zohar, but adapted by the Rebbe, that each individual soul is like a letter in a Torah scroll. Mm. Now, a letter in a Torah scroll is very interesting, because if one letter is missing or is damaged, the whole Torah cannot be used. Now, there are words in the Torah scroll which are very significant words, the name of God, Hero Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And there are lines in the Torah which might seem insignificant. The sister of Lotan was Timna, right? You know, we have genealogical lists. And Maimonides says that every single word in the Torah is of infinite significance. And whether or not we understand its significance, nonetheless, it's there, and it is an expression of the divine. And so, in the same way, if you read that into the idea of each soul being a letter in the Torah, every soul has something very significant in relation to is infinite in their crucial significance in relation to God and the world and the rest of the Jewish people. So in fact there's a teaching which is universal, not only about the Jewish people, about all humanity, that a person should consider the entire world as equally balanced between good and bad, and themselves as equally balanced between good and bad. And the next action that the person does can tip the whole world to the side of good. And so there is a crucial step that each person is able to make, changing the nature of the world and bringing salvation to the world. That's why when a journalist asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what can people do in order to bring the Messiah? He said, acts of goodness and kindness. So the particularized act of goodness that someone does in a very particular and local situation, the lady next door isn't well and you offer to organize her shopping for her or something like that, or cut the hedge. that is a good action which can tip the world to the side of salvation. So that sense of infinite significance for every person. Mm-hmm. Okay, with the help of God.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks.